Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'm going to tell
you what you need to know. Fourth quarter of the program begins right now. Finishing strong here on a Wednesday. We're going to talk to Seth Kaiser, film analyst, chief film analyst for The Athletic and his chief in the North newsletter, coming up here in a moment. Our need to know brought to you by our friends at Twin Peaks, twinpeaksrestaurant.com, where you can check out a wonderful, wonderful 29-degree man-sized draft beer. Well, that's the website. You can go in person to Olathe, Independence, and, of course, the Northland on the boardwalk. It is 29-degree man-sized draft beers for everyone. Go ahead. Stop on by. TVs everywhere. Great place to get together and watch some World Cup soccer, NFL football. We got college football championship games coming up. And, of course, it is your fight headquarters. If there's an MMA or boxing match on, it's on at Twin Peaks. Find the location nearest you at twinpeaksrestaurant.com. Let's start with a little bit of Chris – not Chris Kleiman, excuse me. A little bit of
– Andrew.
Yes, Andrew Reed. We will start with Andy Reid talking about Isaiah Pacheco. I asked him what he saw from Pacheco as he had a nice catch. Mm-hmm. What do you see from him in the receiving game this week against the Rams?
Yeah, so I mean, Saran, he's got really good hands. He just had another 10 opportunity, but he will. As time goes on here, he'll get more opportunities to catch the ball. He did a nice job on that one for sure.
And you and Eric talked about it, like him having patience. You know, we can see how hard he wants to hit the hole, but maybe he needs to be a little more read what's going on. Is that magnified even more in the passing game with some of the option routes and different ways you guys do things, that wherever he is as a runner, maybe he's even that much further back as a receiver?
No, he's done good with that. He actually does well with the routes and his patience on that. The running is getting better. I mean, he's getting better at that. He's got some kind of energy now. I mean, if I had that energy, I'd be 110 pounds. Yeah, I'll borrow some. So he's unbelievable that way, how he plays. And he's that way every day. I mean, that's how he's out of practice and everything else.
If he's runs the route so well, why hadn't he been more in the passing game?
Yeah, I mean,
we've seen Darrell Williams and Spencer Ware and guys that were journeymen come in and be really good in the receiving game, yet he's been kind of non-existent. Now, maybe they're waiting for a big game like this, because really, how many big games have they played since he moved into the starting lineup? And so now we're going to watch him, you know, like after this game, be six catches for 91 yards and two touchdowns or something. We're going to be like, oh, okay, there it was.
He looked pretty fluid in the situation on Sunday, so more than I was expecting. That was an issue that you had brought up to him. No, it wasn't him last week. Was it EB?
It was Eric Bieniemy.
Eric Bieniemy about can he do it? And Bieniemy says no. He's fine there. He looked pretty good Sunday, but you do wonder why it took till week 10 or 11
if he's so good at it.
Right.
Like I think there's clearly an element of a work in progress there at that position. Patrick Mahomes welcomed in a new addition. I asked him about what is the medals. We got Sterling. We got bronze. Like, is there a connection there? Is there a theme we got going?
Yeah, when me and Brittany, when we had Sterling, we didn't know if it was a girl or boy at first, so we started thinking of girl and boys' names, and we wanted to obviously them to have that connection and them to be the brother and sister forever. And so, obviously, I've always wanted to do Patrick LeVon Mahomes III. I thought about that since I was literally like 5-6 years old, and I always thought it was going to be Trey as the third, because I hear a lot of people doing that, and my brother Jackson, whenever we were trying to find something that was a little unique and different, he said, what about bronze? It fits perfectly with Sterling. And we went with that, and I think it works out well. And he can have his own thing now, where he's not Patrick, he's Bronze, even though he's Patrick. And then Sterling and Bronze can have that connection moving forward.
So who's gold? When does they have a third child? Is that child gold?
That would be his father.
Oh, that's right.
You know, if based on the
right, but the if Sterling side. If Sterling is silver, Sterling silver, so you've got silver and bronze. Shouldn't there? So is there going to be a gold at some point?
Whatever makes you happy. You know, well, I'd get it if you're looking for, you know, it's a nickname. It's not the name.
Right.
You know, it's not
as he
Moon
stated,
Unit or
Weasel.
Scout and Thumper and whatever
Apple.
The hell else. All the, you know.
Yeah. Kids name is Patrick, but he's got something he can.
What is it? The cubed sign, or what the hell is the electric car guy's kid's name?
I don't know.
Musk.
Pie, yeah, or something. Yeah. I don't know. Something like that. Wouldn't it? Something like
Octagon. Yeah, it's
Infinity
kind of strange.
Or,
right, right.
You know, bracket.
Nick Cage, his kid is Kal-El.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Could
this
be worse.
A nickname.
Yeah,
people. It's
yes.
a nickname.
His name's Patrick LaVon Mahomes III.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'll deal with it.
But he said he can be called Bronze if he didn't want to be called Patrick.
Yes,
very cool.
But he has to. Weirdly, he has to decide within a week what he's going to be called for his whole life.
Well, that's good.
I thought that was an odd
yeah,
thing to add.
That was in something else we didn't play. By the way, that was. Did you notice when you were listening to it? We didn't play it there in that cut, but like it was all I asked the baby question first, and it was all baby follow-ups, and then it was just kind of silence. And I was like, "All right, are we ready to go to the football? I don't want to like. If I know this is a big deal, I didn't want to step on any features that people are doing, and wanted to do more baby questions. So I kind of went, and he looked down at me, and I'm like, "So I'll make sure we're all done with the not to kill the vibe here, but
yeah." And he goes, "No, oh, that's all right, man."
And I go, and everybody kind of chuckled. I said, "Okay, so didn't go so good against the Bengals, like you know, we did ha ha's. Now we got to talk about the Bengals last year.
I thought about
year.
Keeping that in there if it was a good flow, but
my first thought when I heard that today live was this that transition would have been a lot easier if their upcoming opponent would have been a team they beat by like 40 in the playoffs last year,
right?
Yeah. Speaking of joyous times, how about that ass kicking you laid on the Bengals last year? No, there was no simple grunny, you know, segue to be made on that
right.
one. So somebody had to do it.
You don't mind doing it.
I'm proud of
Sam
you.
Sam McDowell wasn't going to do it. Ty Lebo wasn't going to do it. So I did the heavy lifting.
He's a shock jock.
That's right. I did the heavy lifting. All right, one more from Patrick Mahomes. Talked about Sky Moore. Said it seemed like after he had the problem with the punt, you went right to him. Is that something that, you know, you decided to do, Eric Bieniemy, Andy Reid? Is there a conscious conversation to say, let's get him the ball? How'd that work out?
I think it just worked out that way, but I think EB and Coach Reid do a good job of whenever stuff like that happens, scheming up stuff or calling those plays that might have him as one of the primary options. I just go through my reads and throw it to the guys that are open. I mean, that's the thing of this team is we're not dwelling on that. We know the guys here are competing. They're doing whatever they can to put everything on the line. And if something happens bad, we know it's going the next time you get a chance, you're going to make a play happen. And that's what great teams do, and that's what great players do.
I mean,
good answer.
He obviously, wherever he said, it just kind of comes up that way. So it's probably more in Andy Reid's. Like, I think they probably do call some plays that he's one of the primaries and they get into it. So that makes sense. We hear it all the time. The announcers say it. Yep. Wanted to hear it from somebody who's actually the tip of the spear and getting it done.
The last few weeks, despite the fumble, the last few weeks have really shown the value. This is the Sky Moore we thought we would see earlier in the year. Just taking a while for them to get one on the same page and two to the point where Patrick Mahomes can trust him to throw the ball to him when that read is there, and it seems like he does now. They've really got a little bit of a simpatico the last couple of weeks.
Chris Jones at the podium. He has got the second most sacks of his career already this season. Chiefs already as a team have four more sacks, 35 this year than they had all of last year, 31. I asked him why he and overall the whole unit's been better this year already.
One person, man. Well, actually, two people. Terry Braden and Joe Coven. We got some of the best coaches in the building, and we're just very fortunate. We got a very good group, very young group, a lot of hungry guys in our room. Started with the leadership of Frank Clark, Carlos Dunlap, then the younger guys like Hollis Sanders stepping up this year. Derek Nnadi, who's been in this system for four to five years, and Mike Dana, Tershawn Ward. You know, a lot of guys who's hungry to show that, you know, they belong in this league.
Didn't hesitate for a second. Notice he said some of the better coaches in this building. Not in the game, in this, but these other peons over there, these other,
right,
that's not what he meant, obviously. I'm just taking a little liberty there, right? It just kind of struck me. But giving a lot of credit to the coaching.
Yep.
And Cohen had, you know, some pretty good press clippings that came with him, and it's been real.
Yeah, the fact that year one, bang, there he is, and suddenly Chris Jones is having it's contract year also, but clearly he feels like it's been a major factor, as well as every other player on the Chiefs defense, which I think he named there.
Chris Jones talked about, you know, the question was about Andy Reid saying, well, he's in great shape. He's done a great job. He worked hard in the offseason. He was asked why he concentrated so much on getting in shape this year.
been trying to get this six pack for 3 years, okay? Right now I'm getting older, so the older you get, it's harder to get. No, honestly, I think it's a huge part of nutrition. We got a heck of a strength staff and nutritionist staff here, Barry Rubes. Me and him, we gained a huge personal relationship this offseason, and my goal was to make sure I come back in the best shape I've been in a while. And we focused on that throughout the year. You know, it's a building process. It's a marathon, but we just continue building.
We see you at Joe's. Are the Joe's fries part of the nutrition? Is that part of it?
Yeah.
It's not working for
you. You got to be very decisive, man. Mondays is cheat days for me. So I goes with half a pound of bananas and french fries. They're so consistent, man. That's the thing, consistency with Joe's. Their fries always taste the same. They're always fresh and hot. And the bananas, they're like candy. So that's my only time I get to eat beef. So, you know, I take advantage of it.
What about that? So you do. You see the social media posts. He's at Joe's all the time. And, you know, listen, there are other options at Joe's besides the beef, right? You know, the Portobello's, the Z-Man is a great sandwich.
Pulled pork.
Yeah. But, you know, he likes his Joe's.
Yeah.
Loves his fries. And he's the guy that told us a couple of years ago the secret that, like, if you don't eat all the fries, the air fryer is the way to bring them back to life. So we have followed his lead at the Petro House. We have followed his lead. It's like when I have people over, I hate to have not enough food. If we don't have food left over, I feel like I didn't have enough food. I wanted somebody to go away hungry. So when we get Joe's, there's always like leftover fries, leftover rings, somewhat by design. Because I
feel that way when I don't have
life.
People over. I hate to have not enough food.
Yes, exactly. It's an issue. It's an overall problem. All right, let's take a break. Let's talk to Seth Kaiser, the chief of the North Newsletter. Is his great work. You can check it out on the Substack. He does a great job with it. Seth Kaiser joins us next here in the program.
He's a pastor who likes the passing game, an attorney who enjoys play action more than class action. And he loves to watch Chiefs game tape for hours and hours and hours. He's Seth Kaiser of The Athletic on the program.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Time to talk some football with the Chiefs film analyst from The Athletic. And, of course, his Chief in the North newsletter, mandatory if you're a Chiefs fan, to check out that Chiefs in the North newsletter. Seth Kaiser is with us. He's brought to you by our friends at the University of Kansas Health Center. They've got walk-in care for orthopedic injuries. That's right, same-day care located right there at 435 and all. You can walk right in diagonally across from the Topgolf. New hours Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. Saturdays, it's 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. And don't forget with the holidays, how about giving the gift of better sports performance? That's right, the sports performance holiday sale going on at the University of Kansas Health System. They've got an incredible facility that has just about everything you could want. It's right there at 125th and Antioch. Save 25% right now on sports performance classes of all kinds, whether that's explosion, whether that's lifting, whatever the sport is, baseball. They've got tailor-made classes for a sports. Great gift for any of the young ones that you're looking for. Personal training packages, Qualysis 3D running gait analysis to find out how your stride is working, metabolic performance assessments, and for the golfers, the Titleist Performance Institute golf fitness evaluations and golf performance training. It is all right there at the Sports Performance Center. They're at 125th and Antioch. You can find out more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsperformance. Let's welcome in Seth Kaiser. Seth, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing very, very well. Life is good. How are you, my friend?
I have no complaints. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and I hope you stayed awake during that Rams game. It wasn't easy. It was businesslike. I don't say it to like the Chiefs did anything wrong. There's nothing to get up for in that game, and yet not only did they deliver for those that like to wager, they delivered a cover as well. It's just a businesslike performance against a team with some salty defensive players in a game that you really didn't want to play. I mean, that's any other way to phrase it, or do you have a different view looking at the film?
I don't really have too many different ways of phrasing it. It was businesslike. You could tell they were kind of, they were there, but they were not there. I would give it a C plus or B minus at best. It's nice to know that your B plus or your B minus or C plus game you can still cover a 15.5-point spread. The comparison I've made with the current iteration of the Chiefs, because you and I have been doing this for a long time, the current iteration of the Chiefs almost all the time outside of the freakish game like the Colts game earlier this year, their pizza. No matter what, it's going to be okay. It's going to be more fun to watch than what a lot of fans experience every week. Because, you know, even for the most part, the worst pizza you're going to have is still pretty good. You know, someone's like, oh, hey, we got Domino's. You're going to be like, Domino's? And then you're going to eat half of a pizza, at least. That's how it works with the Chiefs right now. You still have some fun moments. Mahomes did some fun things. Kelce did some fun things. Chris Jones did some fun things. Snead did, et cetera. There's more fun than there used to be, but it's not nearly as much fun as normal. Yeah. And we didn't learn anything new about the team. That's the biggest thing. Like, I didn't learn a single new thing about the team.
Right. I think that's a great way to put it. I'll offer one thing that we learned here in a second. But I think the other thing I might phrase it as, it was, if you're a guy like me and likes combo, it was cheese pizza. I mean, cheese, sauce, you know, crust, that's all still good. I mean, I'd like all the other fun toppings. There was no olives and sausages and onions and pepperonis and all that. I like that. I like the pizza analogy. That's a good one. did we learn that they can run Isaiah Pacheco into a batting ram over and over again, right? Like, we did at least learn that they don't care how hard he gets hit or how many times he gets hit hard. They're going to barrel him into Bobby Wagner no matter what. Even with Ronald Jones active, they are just going to hammer away with him no matter what. We did learn that, didn't we?
Yeah, they are willing to let him go in there and take a beating. And, man, he's willing to take and deliver a beating. I'm not sure I've ever seen a player as determined to show how not hurt he is, like how fine he is after every single hit. Because, man, that guy's bouncy. For a bigger running back, I mean, he just bounces around. And so, I mean, yeah, he's young, I guess. But, man, they were willing to say, well, let's go for it. It was kind of funny because after the Chiefs had one red zone drive fail and they tried a couple of kind of cutesy things. And so Twitter was very upset with them. And then, you know, on the next drive, it's like, we're going to run Isaiah Pacheco so hard into the back of his line. And then everyone was mad about that too. And sometimes you just fail in the red zone. But one good thing I would say with Pacheco is he really, outside times when he was running Aaron Donald's direction, which did not usually go well, he continued to show that development. And the fact that they're willing to hammer away with him a little bit to salt away a win, that's nice to see. Just hopefully he can take that kind of beating.
You know, and one of the things that I'm always amazed at coaches is, like, vision actually matters at the goal line. Like, I don't understand. Like, Barry Sanders being taken out at the goal line was the most asinine thing ever. Well, yeah. Like, he cuts and goes back. Yeah, but he's a runner, and if you tell him you can't go back, he'll at least make the right little jump cut or lean or twist at whatever second to try to wedge through whatever gap might be there. And I actually don't think Pacheco's ever going to be really good at the goal line because he is just going to run as fast as he can to wherever the hole was and put his head down, and there's never going to be that little moment's hesitation, that find that little crease. Like, I don't understand why coaches miss that point.
You know, I think it's so easy to simply just focus on the blocking once you, at any point in the run game, but especially there in the red zone, because you're going to have less creativity. It's going to be a lot more just forward. And so it's always going to be easy, I think, to focus on, did the line get pushed or did it not? And that's probably one reason why you might see a little bit of a myopic point of view in terms of how they even view, you know, who the running back is. And then, you know, I would just, maybe they're hoping that can, you know, in the same way that you've seen some progress, at least I have, in terms of how he's approaching, you know, hitting the hole on some of the gap and power stuff that they're doing, you know, in the middle of the field. Maybe they're hoping that continues to develop closer to the goal line. I think everything hits a little faster there. Everything's so much more condensed that that's going to be tough. But, I mean, here's hoping. They're clearly high on him.
Yeah, no, they are for sure. And is the other criticism, and, we, you know, sometimes we call it a nitpick Monday. If we were to pick nits about, like you said, getting a double, not only a double digit win, but a double digit cover against the defending Super Bowl champions with all their flaws and weaknesses. Is the other thing we can look at is that maybe Andy Reid and this staff don't value sitting some guys down. Like, look, If I'm a gambler and I got the Chiefs minus the points, I'm thrilled Chris Jones is in there and protecting my half-point cover that I've got. That's great. But if I'm trying to win a Super Bowl, why is Chris Jones in the game at the very end with a double-digit lead? Can we not all agree that he's one of, like, maybe after Patrick Mahomes, like, maybe it's Kelce or maybe it's Chris Jones or maybe it's Legarius Sneed, but it's definitely those four are the four that you feel like you've got to have if you're going to win a championship. Why would you be playing those guys late?
My guess, especially with the pass rusher like Chris Jones, is, you know, given the number of incentives that are tied into contracts in terms of sacks and that kind of stuff, those late game pass rushes where they know for a fact that they're passing, that's probably hard to pull a guy off the field. Now, obviously, that's the coach's decision, but I imagine with a pass rusher specifically, that would probably be part of it, because I completely understand where you're coming from. It's just one of those situations where all it takes is one wrong moment, because Chris Jones, the only player they can't win a Super Bowl without is Patrick Mahomes. But you, those other guys you named, especially Kelce and Jones, because I think it's really those three, then there's a gap. Then you've got Sneed and maybe a few other guys. But those three, I mean, especially, you know, so it's like Mahomes, gap, Kelce, Jones, gap, and then for some other really important players. Because you take Jones off of that pass rush, and it becomes potentially catastrophic real quick.
Yeah, and that is one of the things that scares me. I mean, I think we can agree that probably when you're winning as many games as the Chiefs are, and when you have margins, like, there's no reason for Chris Jones to play the most snaps in the NFL for defensive linemen, which is exactly what he's doing for interior defensive linemen. And I think at some point, you know, there ought to be a chance to call off the dogs and get him out of there. I don't know. I digress on that subject. But Seth Kizer is with us. You mentioned Legarius Sneed. I answered a question on Channel 41's Sunday Sound Off about that. Somebody said Legarius Sneed is the Chiefs' fourth best player. Tell me where I'm wrong. And I said, I can't tell you you're wrong. I think he absolutely belongs up there. I would nominate some other guys to consider. Nick Bolton is fantastic. I think when he's in the flow of things, Willie Gay is really good. You know, Juju Smith-Schuster, once he got in the flow of things. You know, there are other important pieces, but I know you called him the Swiss Army knife. That's the exact same term I've used about Legarius Sneed. How important is he? If he is in that third tier, how important is that tier and what he brings to the team?
I think it's really important, especially in the context of where they're at in terms of cornerback depth and his particular skill set. I don't know if you have anyone else on the roster that can do everything that he can do. He really, he's not as experienced or versatile in coverage as, say, Tyrann Mathieu was, but he's fulfilling a lot of those same roles. He's the guy that they're willing to line up on the boundary, which, to be fair, that's something Mathieu never really did. So maybe he can do a few things Mathieu couldn't do as well, because he's got better long speed and size. But you can line him up on the boundary. You can line him up in the slot. You can line him up as essentially almost like a hybrid, kind of that hybrid safety linebacker looking role. He did that a few times when they refused to come out of nickel when the other team went a little heavier, because he's so capable playing in the box and taking on blockers, as long as they're not offensive linemen, and finishing and tackling, he can play that role. So he's a great blitzer. He's a good coverage guy. He's not necessarily he's an elite tackler for a corner, an elite blitzer for a corner. He's not necessarily an elite coverage guy in man or zone, but he's solid in both. And when you have that range of skill set, it allows Spagnuolo to really move him all over and have him be kind of one of the chess pieces that keeps offenses guessing. So he's one of those unique people where you would say maybe he's not the fourth best player, but he might be the fourth most important player. You know, it depends on what you think about, like Creed Humphrey. I think Creed Humphrey is a better center than Legarius Sneed is a corner, but you know, when you take into account backups and depth and the importance of the position and all that kind of stuff, and then the Mahomes mitigating factor on offense, in that he can mitigate almost anything as long as it's not the entire offensive line. I think that's where you get to that argument that Sneed might be the fourth most important player, even if he's not the best, just because his role isn't really replaceable, at least at this point.
Is his future, you mentioned the name Tyrann Mathieu, is his future at safety?
I wouldn't think so. He's good enough in man coverage that I don't think that that's really necessary. And I think he's got more value as a corner. If I recall, and I remember writing about him after the draft, he was switched to safety his final year in college and with kind of mixed results, which is interesting. I assume the same thought process that we're going through right now probably led them to move him to safety when you look at how good he is as a tackler and how comfortable he can be in zone. But he just didn't play as well at safety as he did previous years at corner.
I feel like if you had a defense and you're going to go to like a 4-2-5 and you had a center fielder type safety in the back and then you had two Legarius Sneeds in the slot, would that not be, with a couple of good corners on the outside, would that not be your ultimate secondary if you could dream one up?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you trusted your boundary guys, that would give you so much flexibility in terms of, you know, versus the pass and the run. One of the things that a lot of offenses are designed to do in the run game is force corners to tackle. And that's true at almost every level of football, honestly. We're going to force your 5'11", 195-pound dude to try to tackle our, 6-foot, 200-pound running back who has a head of steam and is way more physical. That's what we're going to do. You're going to be one-on-one. And the Chiefs have a decided advantage in that area, and Legarius Sneed is one of those players that kind of leads the charge at that, and that their corners tackle very well the vast majority of the time, especially in run support. And so I think that really, that'd be an interesting setup for a defense, and with guys as varied as Sneed, you could get away with it.
Tell me, Trent McDuffie, the Chiefs have with Sneed, who's ranked second on PFF's overall grades. They've got two top 15 corners. How good and how much upside is there now that they're getting McDuffie back? He's getting up to speed. How encouraged are you about how good this defense can be with having two high caliber corners like that out on the field together?
I'm really encouraged. I've really liked what I've seen from McDuffie. He's had some tough tests, obviously. The biggest one so far will be up against the Bengals, but he's looked really solid in coverage. I mean, he's tough to shake. He's always in their hip pocket. The only thing people could knock on him was arm length coming out. He moves well. He's so comfortable in zone for a rookie. It definitely, I don't think it's a coincidence the defense has looked better since he's come back because he's a good corner already. I think the ceiling of the defense is going to continue to be on the shoulders of what you see from the defensive line in terms of pass rush. When the pass rush is cooking, they look really solid. When it slows down a little bit, with the supporting guys who aren't Chris Jones, then things look a little more problematic. So I'm excited. I think the ceiling for the defense, at least right now, I'll know more this time next week. Right now, I think it might be a little higher than I was initially thinking this year when it started. I remember you and me talking about, if it can be average, maybe the ceiling for the defense is above average. And boy, wouldn't that be nice come playoff time.
Well, I'm never a believer that you should be targeting average. And I do remember those conversations. And I said, if you're not planning on being top 10, you have had a dismal offseason, because there is plenty of history of teams going from bottom 5 to top 10 in 1 year. Now, a lot of times it comes with a coordinator change. But I think what we saw here was a speed change. I'm looking here, on the pass rush, the Chiefs have 35 sacks, which is tied for 5th in the NFL. But the Eagles and Cowboys are two of the teams in front of them, and they've played an extra game. Now, the Cowboys have 10 more sacks. They have 45. So it's not just that extra game. But the Eagles only have one more sack, and they've played one more game. I mean, this is becoming an elite pass rush team, or, as we talk about a lot, quicker you get there, less time you got to cover, makes your secondary look better. But the longer you can cover, the more time you got to get there, which makes your pass rush look better. Who's benefiting more from who right now?
I earlier in the season, I would have said the secondary was helping the front out more for sure. I think that's starting to tilt a little bit. Something that's interesting, if you even take away, the sack numbers, which are obviously pretty solid this year, their pressure percentage, and that's just, Pro Football References combining hurries, knockdowns, and sacks to kind of, give you an idea how consistently you're hassling the quarterback. They're third in that. And, doing it over a quarter of the snaps. And so I think you're seeing kind of a little more of a symbiotic relationship to where I think it was a little more one-sided earlier in the year. When some of the guys, I think the conversation we had is you need three guys. And lately, it's varied by game, but they have had roughly that. You know, they've had Jones being a superstar, and either Dunlap has a good game and Clark has a good game, or Karloftis has a good game more frequently, and, you know, along with Dunlap, or Colin Saunders has a good game, right? And they've been able to have three guys every game, and kind of the defense as a sum of the parts has been better. When I went back and charted their pass rush against the Jaguars, it was significantly different than what it was against the Raiders earlier this year, where it was either a blitz got home or Chris Jones did something crazy, maybe a stunt worked out. Against the Jags, it was a little bit different. There were guys winning some one-on-one matchups besides Chris Jones, and it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I don't want to correct something I said. I've been quoting that stat for so long. They're now on the same game count as the Cowboys and Eagles. So they have legitimately had more sacks than the Chiefs. So I apologize for that. I'm like, I better check that because of the different buys, because I've been quoting that for a number of weeks now. And so it is, they are fifth in sacks. We'll just leave it at that. That's good enough at 35, which is, I think, aren't they beyond their sack total from last year now? Because I don't know that they had much more than that last year, did they?
I don't know that they did. It wouldn't surprise me one bit, to be perfectly honest. It would take me about 2 seconds to look that up. But if I recall, it was definitely in the 30s. And so if they're not there, they're very, very close.
Yeah, I'm scrambling for it as well. But
I think it was 31 total last year during the regular season.
Yeah.
So they're four beyond it. Just, you know, 11 games in. So they're definitely seeing some good results here. And part of that really is the sum of the parts. You know, George Karloftis, he's only got one sack, and that sack wasn't really, you know, a high quality one, but he has been winning a little more one-on-one lately, and he executes what Spags wants from his defensive ends and interior linemen, honestly, because he rushes from the interior times. He executes that stuff really well. And there's value in that, collapsing the pocket and executing your rush lane, getting a little bit of pressure, even if you don't get home. That there's value in that. And for a rookie to be an above average pass rusher, even if you're not really high level, that's impressive.
Yeah, no doubt. We're talking to Seth Kizer here in the program. What went wrong against the Bengals? What do the Chiefs have to guard against this week?
You know, basically, the interception Mahomes threw against the Rams here on Sunday, he basically played an entire half like that against the Bengals. And that's, you know, a little exaggerated, but not by much. It's the worst half of his career. The only reason it wasn't the worst full game of his career is because he was spitting fire in the first half. And so it's still last year's Titans game is the worst he's ever played. They really need to avoid that. Avoid self-inflicted errors. You know, in addition to Mahomes playing poorly in the AFC Championship second half, you know, Kelce had a drop on what was kind of contested, but something he normally brings in that would have been a huge first down. Tyreek Hill had a couple of crucial drops, including the bomb in overtime. That it was a great contested play, but he really should have come down with that. They had some drops. They had some penalties. They really, as a team, shot themselves in the foot way more than they should have. And that's, I think, probably why the Rams game made people a little uneasy, because they were moving the ball all over the field and then they just shot themselves in the foot multiple times in the red zone. That's not the kind of thing you want to see against a team like the Bengals, who have a very explosive offense. The other thing is just tackling. They really did okay in the aggregate against the Bengals offense. Both times they played them, and it would, you know, play well, 70-yard touchdown. You know what I mean? Or a 50-yard touchdown. And you take away those big plays. Now, the Bengals have been better this year with the whole matriculating the ball down the field, but that's still not their strength. Their strength is relying on big plays. And if you can prevent those, odds are they can't go shot for shot with Mahomes without those big plays. So those are the two things, self-inflicted errors on offense, and then the big plays on defense.
Yeah, but eliminating the big plays is largely playing the shell game, basically, that teams have played against the Kansas City Chiefs. And that's not how Spagnuolo likes to play. He likes to bring the heat.
It's not.
I mean, are the Bengals just kryptonite for the Chiefs? Are they just a bad matchup? And you're asking Steve Spagnuolo to completely change his spots to try to be effective, and that's just something they're not going to be able to do.
One thing that I really liked in the AFC Championship that they changed up from the first time they played them, when Jamar Chase just went completely off, was they did back off a few times and bracket Chase. You know, Matthew would fake a blitz and then he'd bracket. And so they showed that they were able to learn some. in the AFC Championship especially, what it was tackling, more so even than the shells. If you have a couple of plays there where you just tackle and finish, it goes from a bad play, like at the end of the first half, right, which was kind of the start of things cascading. You know, a decent tackle, and you probably force a field goal there, and at the end of the day, that would have made a huge difference, not just in the final score, but in how the entire game played out. But instead, it ends up being like a 40, 45-yard touchdown. And that's a real thing that concerns me. Spags has shown the ability to adapt. He'll never be a shell guy. But that does put more emphasis on you've got to make that tackle, because the Bengals have a bunch of guys that won this tackle might mean a touchdown.
Yeah. How much better are they at tackling just because they're more athletic? That was my gripe last year. It's like, right. Oh, they're not tackling well. Yeah, because they're grabbing at everything because they're not getting to the point of contact fast enough. Like, if you arrive in time, you can square up and put a shoulder in somebody. If you're coming late, you're just getting an arm on somebody. This is a better tackling team because they're a more athletic team, right?
Absolutely. Willie Gay Jr. having a larger role, George Karloftis being on the line, and then Cook being in the back end, McDuffie being one of the corners. Josh Williams is an excellent athlete. There's more athleticism across the board on defense. You know, Justin Reed he's a different type of safety than Matthew. I think he's played pretty well this year, but he's more athletic at this point than Matthew was at this point in his career last year. So you really have more athleticism at all three levels. And I think that definitely matters. They've had a few games where their tackling was less than secure, shall we say. But overall, they're in position much more frequently.
Were you happy with what you saw out of Brian Cook?
I have been. I haven't extensively reviewed him. And it's so tough with safeties because assignment is so – it depends so much on assignment. But you definitely notice him when he's on the field. And he's one of those guys, kind of the way you described it, he's one of those guys that arrives. Right. He is generally speaking a guy when he's coming up, he gets there quickly. He gets there and lays a hit. So he's got the athleticism. He's got the physicality. I think there's just going to need to continue to be experience on some of the route combinations that he's looking at.
All right. I've left it to the very end, but can you explain to me how Sky Moore was back there returning punts? You want to take a shot at what would lead someone to believe that would be a good idea?
I think, you know, if I were going to, you know, the whole devil's advocate thing, I would argue that, you know, Andy Reid's always been a coach that lets players kind of shoot through slumps, as it were. And that's like his way of showing confidence in someone. It's like, no, you got this. You know, don't let it get in your head. We're going to go right back to you. That's kind of consistently worked for him. You know, keep firing, right? You know, after Mahomes threw an interception against the Niners in the Super Bowl. I think in this case, it was just stubbornness. I think they like his skill set with the ball in his hands, and they had the belief, and maybe it was Reed, maybe it was a special teams coach, they had the belief that, okay, well, we can teach anyone to field punts cleanly. And especially with his ball skills when he's a receiver, maybe they just genuinely they just couldn't believe the idea that this kid can't field a punt. It's just not something he can do consistently. And I'm sure he had a great week in practice. I'm sure he does it all the time in practice. So that would be probably the reason why they justified it. I think it was a terrible decision, and I was glad to hear Andy Reid kind of acknowledge we're going to take that off his plate, because he's shown a skill set as a receiver.
Yes.
He's shown he can contribute. He's shown he can be good. And I was legitimately worried that they're going to shatter a rookie's confidence doing something that doesn't really make a difference. So it was good to see him bounce back after that muff.
Yeah, it was for sure. I just, you know, for me, I think it's pure arrogance. I think it's they've heard everybody say, you know, get this guy out of there. And so they're going to keep running him out there, because I'll give you an assignment. How about this for an assignment in your next film study? They have in the last two of the last 3 weeks given up an onside kick, and they've given up a fake punt. And I subscribe to the theory because they are so hell-bent on getting a good return that they are forsaking playing good special teams everywhere else. The special teams have been atrocious. Atrocious, terrible in every facet of the game. In every facet of the game, they have been awful at some point. Maybe they're not awful at every facet every game, but they have been awful at every facet. And I feel like the reason they're giving up these returns is because they're spending their time in practice going, you got to get back, Trent McDuffie. Get back and get a block so we can get the big return. And then a simple stop route beats them for a first down. You guys got to peel back. You got to get your blocks on these kickoffs. And they leave 17 yards in an easy onside kick. Like, I believe it is infecting the rest of the special teams game. And if they don't get their head out, it's going to cost them in a game like the Bengals this week.
It's definitely one of those margin of error things. You know, when you are a Super Bowl contender and you know you got to beat great teams, you want to shrink or you want to raise your margin of error as much as possible. And by avoiding mistakes, you can do that. You know, you avoid the obvious mistakes. There's a lot of luck involved in football. And so just make your life as easy on yourself as possible and avoid obvious mistakes. You know, kickoff returns, they've done a pretty good job with some of that. I get it, and you can't always avoid it. But with punt returns, I honestly, if I had my vote, I would say you put Justin Watson back there because he seems very comfortable fielding mm-hmm. them, and he fields them very securely. You put him back there, he's only going to return it if he has clear yardage in front of him, and he'll do it the Mike Hughes route. He will run forward 10 yards and hang on to the ball. That's all I need out of my punt returner.
Yeah.
Field it cleanly, run forward 10 yards if it's there, and let it go if you're inside, you know, the 5 or the 10. That's really it. And trying to do more with that, I think, is just ignoring how good punters and coverage units have become.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. All right, we're talking to Seth Kizer here. Let's get to our Final Four. We've kept him too long. We'll move quickly here. Our Final Four brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. Give the gift of health this holiday season. New clients save 25% on sports performance classes and personal training packages. Everything from golf, baseball. If you just want to get in better shape for your golf game, they've got classes for you. It's the Sports and Medicine Performance Center at the University of Kansas Health System. You can also save 25% on running gait analysis. Learn more right now at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsperformance. Seth, I will start you with this. Since you brought up the pizza, are you a thin crust or thick crust?
I'm usually a thick crust guy unless the thin crust is done incredibly well.
Okay. Okay. I like that. There's a layer. There's an appreciation for both there. That's nice to hear. What do you get on your pizza?
I'm generally speaking a plain Jane guy. To me, if a pizza's not good enough with just pepperoni, I'm not sure why I'm eating it.
Oh, okay, pepperoni's not plain. The pepperoni's fine. I'm okay with that. If you're going to just say cheese, I got a lot of New York, New Jersey friends that are like, and Boston that are like, oh, just cheese. Like, no, I don't. No, that's not pizza. That's garlic bread. You know?
No, yeah, I need at least some pepperoni.
Yeah, okay, I'll take that. All right, what's the Chiefs' final record?
Oh, let's think. They're 9-2 right now. I think they are going to drop. I think they're going to drop two more games. And so I think that leaves me at my initial thought was 13-4. And that's still where I'm at.
Okay, 13-4. And give me your prediction on the game against the Bengals. Who wins? What score?
I think the Chiefs pull it out 27-24. That Bengals defense is really good. And I think they managed to hold the Chiefs to an extent.
Okay, I like it. Seth, you're the man. We appreciate it, buddy. Thanks so much. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue Burnt End of the Hour answer. Since the debut of the AP preseason poll, that goes back to 1962, three preseason number one teams have gone on to have a three-game losing streak. I asked for any one of those.
No idea.
Michigan State in 2019-20, okay. Kansas in the 2004-05 season, and Duke in 1988-89. If North Carolina loses tonight at number 10 Indiana, and they are an underdog, they'll be the fourth team ever to do it.
Wow. Wow. Doesn't happen often, but
no.
We've talked a little bit about how volatile that top five has been.
Sure is this year.
In the polls. We'll talk more about that perhaps tomorrow. Giving away some Joe's Kansas City Barbecue, right? Joe's.
Oh, yes.
Joe'sKC.com. You just heard Chris
Jones. Kansas City Barbecue?
Yeah, exactly. Chris Jones is a fan of the fries, the consistency, always hot and fresh, best seasoning ever. Get you some Joe's fries along with, go with the Chris Jones. half pound of burnt ends, order of fries. It is a great time always to get to Joe's, joeskc.com. And, of course, remember, you can send that anywhere in the country. You got friends, family. I think clients, too, if you're in sales, what would be better than getting a Z-Man or a Rocket Pig kit? You can make those wonderful sandwiches anywhere in the country. Coast to coast, they deliver. Most of them get there in about 2 days. So don't hesitate. Order up. A lot of people, you'll put smiles on their faces this holiday season with a great barbecue kit from Joe's Kansas City Barbecue. Online at joeskc.com. You know, I would buy this story. Terrell Owens, retired NFL star wideout, Hall of Famer, right? Who didn't go to his own Hall of Fame thing.
Right,
or,
right.
Whatever that little shenanigan was. Said a fight caught on camera in which he punched a man in a CVS parking lot, because that's usually where your altercations happen.
Same here.
Hey, I need athlete foot medicine. No, I need cough drops. I mean, out of my way, man. It's there at the CVS parking lot. It was the result of a, quote, aggressor threatening him and a fan he was talking to at the California store. Owens told the Associated Press in a statement that he acted in self-defense Saturday night when the man, quote, made offensive gestures and threatening statements. You buy it?
Coin flip.
Yeah.
That's a weird, that'd be a weird story to make up, I guess, but.
There are jerks out there, but, I mean.
Why would you go after the guy that size?
I don't know. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.